Hi, everyone. Dave Biddle here. Got a great show for you today with Patrick Murphy. All right, so there's a lot of criticism out there nationally, not really from Buckeye fans, about Julian Sain. Is that misplaced? What do we expect from Sain this year? Do we think he's going to have a good season, or is he going to have an elite season? Pat and I are going to break that down. We're also going to look at Ohio State's offensive line, the big recruiting announcements that are coming up for Ohio State involving three guys in particular that they would love to land. And we'll talk about Ohio State's men's basketball team this year and whether or not we think Jake Diehler's put together a pretty good roster. All right, guys, I'll talk to you soon. Good morning, Bucknutters. Welcome to the Bucknuts Morning Five here on Friday, July 17th, 2026. I am Dave Biddle, joined by Patrick Murphy. J-Book is traveling today. He'll be back next week. Pat, here in Columbus, where you are as well, it looks like Mars out there with the wildfires coming down from Canada. We weren't the first to get it. I was seeing all these pictures from like Minneapolis and Chicago and Detroit, and I was thinking, oh, here it comes. And then late last night, it was here. I was out playing tennis, and then this morning, it just looks like Mars.
Yeah, it's weird. The first thing my wife, which is still a weird thing because I still just got married in April.
That is weird. Even for me, that's weird to hear you say that.
I know. This morning, she got up to get ready for work, and she was like, hey, and I'm just kind of laying in bed. I'm half awake. She's like, hey, she's like, you know, the weather, the air outside. And I was like, yeah, I've heard about it. She's like, it's really bad today. So don't go for a run. Don't let the dog out for a long period of time. I'm like, okay, whatever. And then when I got up and looked outside, because she's a nurse and we have blackout curtains in our room, I got up and looked. I was like, oh, she wasn't kidding. Like, this is weird. So yeah, it's been strange. The MLS, I know we're not a soccer podcast, but it came back. MLS came back after the World Cup break last night. They canceled the game in Chicago.
What's their nickname? The Chicago what?
Yep, Fire.
Fire. Yeah. I mean, that was kind of apropos, canceling. And it was going to be the coach's first game, right?
No, the coach is Greg Berhalter. You recognize Greg.
Oh, yeah,
your
buddy. Oh, okay, I'm thinking of something else.
Their player, they just signed Lewandowski from
Bayern
Munich fame.
That's what I'm thinking of, Lewandowski. Yeah. Not the coach, player.
So his debut was postponed.
There you go. Trying to catch up on all the comments here. We had people in here making comments like, you know, half hour before the show. I love it. I love our loyal listeners out there. We'll get to all the comments. All right. So after we talk about looking like Mars here in Ohio, now they're saying it might, speaking of soccer, they're saying it might affect the World Cup final in New York, really New Jersey, on Sunday. Hopefully everything is okay there. All right. The latest being is the summer of Julian Sain slander, as I call it. I say that tongue in cheek. No one's saying he sucks. But the latest was Josh Pate's podcast. He had an anonymous coach say, I just don't think Julian Sain has very much heart. And he referenced the fact that he doesn't like run a lot. People keep forgetting, Pat, and you and I know this because we covered the damn team. Ryan Day coaches this out of his quarterbacks. The one exception was Will Howard. Justin Fields talked about it. CJ Stroud talked about it. And we were saying the same thing about CJ. He never runs. He never runs. Never runs until the Georgia game where he ran. And then people asked him, why didn't you do that earlier? And he's like, Coach Day didn't want me to. So to say Julian doesn't have heart, that is just completely off base to me. I'm curious to get your take on that. And then we're going to push it forward and, you know, talk about our expectations for him. But begin with that. Do you agree with me that's more Ryan Day coaching it out of his quarterbacks, or do you think Julian doesn't have heart? I know there's a lot of middle ground there, but I'm curious to get your thoughts on that.
Yeah, I don't buy that. Now, I'm not saying that Josh, who worked with both of us, and I think we both like Josh, I'm not saying he made that up or anything along those lines, but I think that's somebody looking from afar and making an assessment on a kid. I saw Julian after, I believe it was after the Miami game, though it may have been after the Indiana game, walking through the tunnel, both on his way back to the locker room. And then I think it was when I was coming out to do What We Learned Live with you, walking back, he'd already changed and whatnot. And that's a kid that was crushed by losses, a loss like that. And so, you know, he cares. I think there's no question in my mind about that. And then just to get to where you are as a college football player, to be the starting quarterback for Ohio State, like you don't get here without having heart, having, you know, the ability to fight through things, the ability to persevere, all that stuff, you know. And it's not like Julian is the most physically gifted quarterback who just made it this far because he's just athletically better than everybody else or has this huge cannon of an arm. Like, this is a kid who's talented and physically gifted, no doubt, but has had to work at it and whatnot. So I think that's an off-base assessment of Julian. Look, I think it adds, you and I've talked about this. I've talked about it when I've been on 97.1 The Fan here locally throughout the offseason. Like, I think there's been a lot of, I don't want to say Julian saying slander, because I think a lot of it's just forgetting about what he accomplished last year, because maybe people are focused on those last two games as opposed to the first 12. And even in those last two games, there were some good things. But I think this offseason has given Julian, if he needs it, a lot of motivation to go out and, you know, put together another really good year. Let's not forget, Julian Sand was a Heisman Trophy finalist. And
as a redshirt freshman, which is not even a thing anymore. That was the last year we even have or going to have redshirt freshman or true freshman. That's going to be – yes, go ahead. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you. Go ahead, sir.
No, you're fine. I just think – like, he didn't get to that point by accident. And I've seen people point to the schedule when sort of poo-pooing Ohio State and Julian in particular. Look, the schedule is what the schedule is, right? You know, they still played Texas, and I know he didn't do a ton in that game. He went to Ann Arbor and helped the Buckeyes beat Michigan. He was very, very much a part of that. You know, Penn State wasn't Penn State, but, you know, that's still a team of talented players. You know, Julian will get tested more this year, no doubt about it. We'll learn a lot about Julian this season. But you know, this is a former five-star kid who was Nick Saban's last quarterback, right? So we're doubting what this kid can do. Come on, guys. I think there's been too much negativity or just not enough positivity about a kid who had such a great first season as a starter. And by all accounts, at least if you're paying attention locally, is only getting better this offseason.
Yeah, would you agree? So when we're looking at our expectations for year two as Julian as the starter this year, safe to say that the floor is he'll be at least good. Is that fair to say, in your opinion?
I would say the floor is higher than that. Like, if he's good, just good, then I don't think it's a successful season for him, and it probably affects the Buckeyes. Like, first of all, because this defense lost eight starters, I think for the second straight year, and not to doubt what Matt Patricia can do, but I think this offense is going to have to carry more of the load, especially early in the season, than it did a year ago. Plus, there's the difficult schedule. You're going to have games where you're going to have to score more points. And then I think just from Julian's perspective, like, he's got to continue to evolve and take steps. And when was the last time you saw a Ryan Day quarterback go from year one to year two without getting better? You know, the only guy... well, really two guys, I guess, one being Will Howard, who didn't have a second year, but definitely got better working under Ryan Day. And then Kyle McCord, who transfers. Like, I've always said, I would have been really interested. I was fine with how things played out, obviously, with Will Howard coming in. But I'd be interested to get like a peek into an alternate reality where Kyle McCord plays a second year at Ohio State and just see how much better he may have been in the Buckeye offense that year. I don't know if the Buckeyes go on and win the national championship or anything like that. But
they wouldn't have won a national championship with Kyle McCord. There's no way. Will Howard's leadership and rushing ability, I thought, was perfect for that team. And I know McCord had a good – I mean, he led the nation in passing yards, but he also led the nation in passing attempts. Like, Syracuse didn't run the ball at all. Anyway, I don't want to sit here and trash Kyle McCord, but here's my thing. I was trying to be, like, not a – like a homer coming in here. He's at least going to be like really good, right? That's the absolute floor. I agree with you. I'll be shocked if we, and this is however, it's a little nebulous to define good or great, however you want to define it. I have a good idea in my mind. If he just has a good year, like you said, I think that's a disappointment. I think he's going to have a great year. Now, does great year mean he's definitely going to win the Heisman? I'm not predicting he's going to win the Heisman, but I will say this, Patrick. If I had to pick one person to win the Heisman, it would be him. And there's some other really good candidates, you know, C.J. Carr and Dante Moore. We'll see about Arch Manning. I don't know what to think about that. I thought he was so highly overrated watching him last year. Then he did come on at the end of the year. He's got some pretty good people around him to teach him how to play football with his uncles and his grandfather. So maybe he'll turn it on now as he's entering his fourth year, which I think we forget. I think Saiyan's going to have a great year. I don't think it's going to be a good year, or people are going to say somewhere between good and great. I think he's going to have a great year. I think he will be at least back in New York as a Heisman finalist. And again, if I had to pick one guy to win it, it would be him.
Yeah, I think of the guys, like, yeah, you mentioned some of the names there. I mean, you look at the Heisman odds. I haven't looked at the updated ones. I don't know if you have recently. But last time I checked, I think Julian was fourth behind Manning, Kalen Carr, and Dante Moore, who are all very good players and all had good seasons last year. But again, Julian was in New York for the Heisman Trophy final, or the Heisman Trophy ceremony. None of those other guys were. So, like, what, based on what we have in front of us, this isn't the NFL draft. We're not talking about who's going to go first off the board. Based on what we've got, the data that's out there, Julian was the best quarterback of the returning group last year, right? So, you know, and there's other ways to judge that and stuff. I'm not saying the Heisman finalists are the only way, but, like, he was considered one of the top, what, four players in college football last year by people that know college football. I don't think we ever look at the Heisman ballot and say, like, oh, man, they really got this wrong. Like, those were the best players. So, yeah, I'm getting fired up here early on a Friday, because I've said for a long time, I think it's just the disrespect or lack of acknowledgement for what he did and what Ohio State has done for quarterbacks since Ryan Day has been here. You know, I feel like people are forgetting that part too. It's just all gone too far. I think Julian is in line for another really big year.
All right, switching gears. A lot of recruiting going on. I don't know if today is going to be really good for Ohio State. Do we feel like I don't think Ohio State's going to get Sales. What do you think?
No, I don't think so. And you know, you and I aren't the recruiting gurus that Garrick and others are. But
especially
this
Garrick.
Does, yes, especially Garrick. But this does seem to be Alabama, Texas, and I saw that pop up there. Indiana for a 5-star wide receiver. I went to look the other day when Garrick and I were talking about this, because he's going out of town. He's taking some vacation, and obviously they've got these two potential commitments. And he was like, hey, I've got the stories ready. If things happen, a little peek behind the curtain there. You know, are you able to make these stories live if guys do commit? And I was like, yeah, no problem. We all do that for each other if we're busy. But so I went to look at Indiana's recruiting class. Like, oh, has Indiana taken like this big bump just because, you know, the Sales commitment could very well go that way? And it turns out they have received some of a bump, but landing a kid like this is just mind-boggling for Indiana. And I guess, you know, winning a national championship is mind-boggling. But if they were, they have the 47th ranked class in the country. Their top player is the number 233 player. Now, Indiana under Kurt Cignetti hasn't needed guys that recruiting rankings or anything say is talented, but you add a 5-star wide receiver in the future, that's wild for me just to try and process that. And then obviously Texas, Alabama, that all makes sense. What I do think is interesting from an Ohio State perspective is sort of how they've approached wide receiver recruiting this cycle. And, you know, I think they would love to add a guy like Sales, but I also get the sense that they aren't too bent out of shape on the fact that no one is expecting him to commit to Ohio State, and that he, you know, is maybe even not really, really that focused on the Buckeyes. And I don't think that this is a knock on Cortez Hankton. From talking to people, it sounds like next year is going to be the year where Cortez Hankton is going to get really tested. I think he already did his sort of big recruiting with the retainment, I guess, of Chris Henry Jr. when he first arrives at Ohio State after Brian Hartline leaves, making sure that everything, you know, kind of stays put there, because, you know, Chris Henry Jr. technically could have jumped in the transfer portal and ended up somewhere else, even though he'd already signed with the Buckeyes. It also, I think, is a sign that Ohio State has sort of allocated those resources that so often went to the wide receiver room and Brian Hart line to other areas. You look at the offensive line recruiting, you look at the defensive line recruiting, and I know we'll talk about that in a second, but I think that the Buckeyes have looked and said, look, we've got talented wide receivers. Maybe we don't need two or three in every class, and we can, you know, share with some of the other programs in the country, but we're going to go and land some of these other positions of need this cycle. And, you know, we'll kind of move that money around to where it needs to go. And you know, I think you're seeing that. So I do not expect Sales to end up at Ohio State, but I also don't think that this is a sign that like Ohio State is going to lose the wide receiver U moniker or that Zone 6 is falling off. I just think that they're approaching things a little bit differently inside the Woody when it comes to how they're handling recruiting assets.
And they're crushing it in the trenches, and they have 2 5-star wide receivers in the class. It's not like they've got like, oh, we got a couple of 3-stars. They have 2 5-star wide receivers in the class and a 3-star.
Yes.
I tend to think if Ohio State wants you and you're a wide receiver, even with the new wide receiver coach in Cortez Hankton, I tend to think that makes you automatically a 4-star. But anyway, yeah. All right. But I think it's going to get better tomorrow, hopefully. I don't know for sure, but I like what I'm hearing with Carlos May. And we've had some people ask about that as well. He's a very high 4-star defensive tackle. Man, this would be a perfect way to polish off this awesome D-line class. They've been so good on both sides of the ball in the trenches with this class, like I said. And I think just looking at the 2026 team itself, I like how they look in both trenches. We'll get in the offensive line in a minute. But again, with your disclaimer, we're not the recruiting guys, but just from following all of Garrick's reports and kind of what I've been reading for some of our national guys on 24/7, it sounds encouraging for Ohio State is how I put it. He's going to announce tomorrow at 3:00.
Yeah, I think it sounds definitely encouraging. Ohio State obviously has already done well in this class with the defensive line. The push from Larry Johnson, I think, helped by the fact that he has some more of this financial backing than maybe he has in the past. Just again, because I think the Buckeyes are designating resources in a different way. You've seen that. And look, Larry Johnson has always been big on relationships and kind of doing things his way, which may come across a little old fashioned, but it's worked. It's been helped by being able to tell these kids, hey, we've got this NIL package that we can give you. And so I think now you've got a guy like DJ Jacobs, you got a guy like Marcus Fakoto, and now you're going to add sort of that interior guy potentially with a guy like this who I think, you know, wasn't maybe the number one player on Ohio State's board, but is certainly right up there from everything I understand. So if he picks Ohio State, and I think there's still some, you know, I think that's still up in the air, but I do think there are positive signs from the Buckeyes. You know, if you read some of the stuff that both Garrick and some of our national recruiting guys have posted on Bucknuts, I think the vibes are pretty good, I would say, heading into this weekend. And, you know, we'll see. But I think, look, a year ago, we watched Ohio State on both sides of the ball at the end of the season have trouble in the trenches. So what has Ohio State done? They've addressed that this offseason. And this would be another key piece, I think, that would really, you know, help. Obviously, the future, that's not going to impact this season. But I think there's a recognition of, like, maybe we haven't been as good in the spots that we need to be.
All right, 3:00 tomorrow. Yes, we're feeling good about Carlos May becoming a Buckeye. No relation to Tim May, as far as I can tell.
I don't know. Tim's got a lot of relatives.
I mean, the young man is from Alabama, too. I mean, you start putting 2 and 2 together on that. Now, Tim is actually originally from Texas, but obviously he's an Alabama fan. Also lived in Alabama for a certain period of his life, but he mostly grew up. I believe he was born in Texas and grew up there. But Tim May, I love him. I'm so, like, impressed with his energy, his enthusiasm. Like, he's just – I know you feel the same way about Tim. You know, you guys do some – You've worked with him many times over at the Fan, as I have, and just seeing him over interviews, Big fan of Tim May. I'm kidding, guys. Carlos May and Tim May. I'm sure 99% of you know I'm joking. They're not related, we think. All right, speaking of recruiting, so we're feeling good about Tim May's nephew tomorrow. But DGG, the more I talk about this, it's gone from, oh, if I had to pick, it'd be Ohio State, but I know it's close. Then it's like, oh, it's 50-50. And then it was like, I was thinking, oh, crap, now it feels like it's 55-45 Tennessee. The more I talk about it, I think it's more like he's leaning Tennessee. What's your vibe?
I don't know how to make heads or tails of this. And I said this, I was on the Fan this week, and they asked about this. I said, look, if anyone is trying to tell you that they know what David Gabriel Georges is going to do, they're probably lying. And I don't even know if David Gabriel Georges knows what he's going to do at this point. I think this is one of those rare situations that it may come down to when he sits at the table or however he chooses to do it to make his decision. So, look, the Buckeyes have done what they think has been a really good job. Now, they are recruiting him very different than Tennessee. They have, when he was on campus, it was very business focused. And by business, I mean football. You know, here's what we can do for you on the football field. Here's how Carlos Lachlan is going to coach you. You know, Carlos Lachlan was, I think, the first guy to offer him a scholarship back when he was at Oregon. He was one of the first for sure. He's had a longstanding relationship with Gabriel Georges. You know, a lot of eggs in this basket. And that doesn't mean that if they miss out, Ohio State's going to be screwed or anything like that. But they've put a lot of emphasis on landing a player like this. So I think that the way that they've handled it has been very different. Tennessee, you know, sort of roll out the red carpet, bring out four or more players. Let's talk about NIL. What can we do for you? All that type of stuff. And look, Ohio State has offered what they believe is a very fair NIL package to David Gabriel Georges. But, you know, they are playing by what they see as the rules, whereas, you know, Tennessee is sort of, from my understanding, and no one knows this for sure, but sort of pushing the boundaries. And look, there's no rules right now, so there's nothing wrong with what Tennessee's doing, I guess. But I definitely think that, you know, it's going to come down to, what does David want? Does he want to go to a place with the proven track record of winning, the talent that Ohio State has had at running backs, you know, under Carlos Lachlan, but even well before that? Or, you know, does he want to go to Tennessee and maybe kind of try and not be in a legacy or recent legacy of top running backs, but, you know, kind of blaze his own path there. And obviously the money, you know, we don't do this for free, Dave. We're not podcasting. We're not writing for free. Like, we all want money for the work that we do, right? So I'm not saying that if he picks, you know, the better NIL package, there's anything wrong with that. But, you know, I think it's pretty neck and neck, I guess, is the way I'm viewing this right now. And the outcome, I think, is still very much up in the air. This, you know, we're talking about some of these others. Like, I feel like we have a sense of both of these other announcements, whereas I just don't with David and where he's going to go. So maybe it'll come to a better, better picture as we get closer. But we've said that for the last few months, and it's still very up in the air, I think.
I think you know how I feel about the offensive line this year. I think they're going to be very good. I understand why some national scribes have big question marks about them, because they don't watch Ohio. They don't watch Ohio State play all 14 games and then rewatch them probably like we do. But they definitely watched those last two games, and Ohio State's O-line got their butts kicked and then some by Indiana and Miami. So part of me gets it. It's interesting though. You also have some national, you know, reporters and experts like Phil Steele, for example, who are bullish on this Ohio State offensive line. Phil Steele ranks them as the number two offensive line in the country this year. He's got Ohio State's D-line number one. That surprised me. I think they're going to be solid on the D-line. I'll be surprised if they're the best defensive line in the country, but if they are, look the heck out. And then you'll have some other writers that say, when they're doing their stories talking about Ohio State, and it's like, name the – I did a piece for Bucknuts today, like talking about a piece on ESPN, and it was, they have Ohio State number one in the nation in their preseason poll, but they went through all top 25 teams, and they said, what's the major concern or what is the biggest question for each team? And for ESPN, it was the offensive line. So there's opinions all over the board. You know mine. I think I know yours. Like, where are you at on this offensive line as we enter this season?
I am intrigued. we were talking before we started recording that, I wrote this story the other day, sort of an optimistic view on the offensive line. And that if this offensive line plays to where I think it's capable of, then this Buckeye offense could be really, really good. And I think it'll be good even if the offensive line has some issues. But the reason for optimism is the returning starters. They're the most experienced offensive line in the country. They have guys who have played in the College Football Playoff. They've played and won a national championship. So don't discount that. And then there's also the ideas that you can get better during the offseason. Are you aware of that, Dave? Because I feel like it gets forgotten a lot that players can improve from one year to the other. And so I think the ability, the fact that they're not starting from ground zero with a lot of these guys, that they have all played in big games, coming back, that experience is going to be valuable. They've played in big-time atmospheres. They're going to have to do that this year. And then they're motivated. Like, you were there in the spring when we talked to guys like Luke Montgomery and Carson Hinsman, who admitted, like, we did not play our best games in the biggest moments at the end of last season. And so the motivation to get better each and every day this offseason is a big factor that I think doesn't get talked about enough. And I think that they're going to be more properly slotted into positions individually with, as you and I've talked about, I think the move of Austin Saraveld back to right guard and Ian Moore at left tackle, which is how I think they'll line up. I think that makes more sense for this offensive line. Like, to me, Austin Saraveld just isn't a left tackle as well as he played last year. And now you've got a guy who fits that mold a lot better. So, and that's not to talk about the addition of Arthur Smith and what he's done with offensive linemen in the past and all those type of things. So I think there's room for optimism. I think you can also take a negative approach and be like, look, what I saw in the last two games, the two biggest games of the year, is a reason that, I'm skeptic about this. But I do think that there's reason to be optimistic about this group, if nothing more than that experience is going to serve them well.
Ready to level up? Chumba Casino is your playbook to fun. It's free to play with no purchase necessary. Enjoy hundreds of online social games like blackjack, slots, and solitaire anytime, anywhere with fresh releases every week. Whether you're at home or on the go, let Chumba Casino bring the excitement to you. Plus, get free daily login bonuses and a free welcome bonus. Join now for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Play Chumba Casino today. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. T&Cs apply.
All right, we're done talking Ohio State football on the show. I do want to close talking some Ohio State men's basketball. So if you don't care about that, I hope you guys have a great weekend. But you guys got a chance, you guys, to cover the basketball team. I used to be one of those guys that I remember covering like every Thad Matta press conference. So maybe his last couple years I started. That's when I transitioned just doing football. But you guys got a chance to interview Jake Diebler yesterday. He really likes the depth, the talent, and the height of this team. I agree with that. I think I'm intrigued by this roster. I'm not acting like it's a top 10 roster, but I think they have a chance of being a solid top 20, top 15 roster. I like this roster. You guys got a chance to interview the freshman. Speaking of my time on the beat, Thad, my one complaint about Thad was he wouldn't let us talk to the freshmen until they had played a game. So like we couldn't talk to like Mike Conley and Greg Oden, the Thad Five, until they had actually played in the game. And Greg didn't play in a game until like the 10th game. I remember I was covering it. It was against Valpo, and he was on that Valpo team when Greg Oden made his debut. Jake Diebler player for Valpo when Greg Oden shooting free throws left-handed because he had broken his right wrist. That's when he made his debut, and that was really cool. But we couldn't talk to the freshmen until they had played. You guys got to talk to all the freshmen yesterday. That was really cool. I was impressed with Anthony Thompson's attitude. I thought that he came across very mature. Just your thoughts on this team. Like, what are your expectations? Do you think they can be a solid top 20 team? Do you think that's maybe asking a little too much? Just what are your thoughts on the roster and your expectations for this team?
Well, first of all, it's early, right? I mean, we're still in summer. They've still got summer workouts. They're going to go to Puerto Rico this offseason to play some games, or this preseason, I guess I should say. They have that pretty exciting event down in Dayton, the CareSource Invitational, where they're going to play hopefully outdoors, assuming the weather cooperates.
Mason, not Dayton, but yes.
Whatever. It's all the same. No, you guys down
it's,
there.
It's actually closer to Cincinnati than Dayton.
The two guys
it's,
I knew
it's
from...
Almost, it's almost... It's across the street, across the highway from Kings Island. It's Mason, Ohio.
Okay. All right, fine. Sorry. All right, they're playing in Mason.
Kings Mills, if we want to be really, 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 really specific. Kings Mills, right. Ohio. There you go. Sorry.
Now that our Ohio geography lesson is done for the day, playing in Southern Ohio and potentially outdoors. So look, I think from what we've seen now, I'll be honest, because I was out of town during doing some World Cup travel. Yesterday was the first day I've gotten to watch this team practice. I know Steve's been at a couple more of the open practices, but they look different. Like, these guys are bigger. Like, just talking about the guards, you know, in that they added this offseason. Not to take anything away from Bruce Thornton, but the size of these guards, Justin Pippen, Curtis Givens, Jimmy Williams, like, they are bigger guards that I think will just – that alone will make an impact. And if Josh Adjiwuana, you know, can
That's
stay
exactly
healthy –
That's exactly why, like, I say Josh O. That's exactly why I just go Josh O, is that –
yeah, he you know, like, him in the paint, assuming he's healthy, like, that's a dominant size wise physically big man, you know, so I think that's a good place to start, right? Is that physically I think they're going to be a different team. I think they're going to be able to get up and down more. That's what Jake Diebler wants to do. They're going to shoot, you know, when talking to those freshmen yesterday, Anthony Thompson, excuse me, talked about his shooting. LJ Smith talked about his and Anthony Thompson's shooting. And then when we talked to Alex Smith, he said, "I'm a shooter." That's three freshmen right there that just want to let the ball fly. Now, you know, they've got to do it within the offense, but they just haven't had guys like that. I mean, Jameson Battle's probably been their best three-point shooter over the last few years. And look, Jameson Battle's an NBA player, but these are, you know, four- and five-star kids that should it make an impact. So I like this roster. I think a lot of it is going to depend on, you know, John Mobley becoming more of a facilitator. We saw his leadership, which was really noticeable, you know, barking at guys yesterday. And then Amari Bynum, where is that next step for him heading into his sophomore year? Like, those two are going to drive this thing, I think. And then, you know, as the freshmen come on, as the transfer guys kind of fill into their roles. So you asked sort of where I think, like, to me, this team, I think, you know, minimum needs to be around the top 25 more consistently. I need to be writing on Monday mornings top 25 articles about this Buckeye team, yes. Which has not happened since, you know, the Holtman days, like middle of the Holtman days. So I think that that needs to be the minimum, is that this team's flirting with the top 25. And then I think the ceiling is, you know, higher than that. Yeah, I'm not going to go out and say that this team, you know, ends up being a top five team this year. I'm not sure they have that, but the ability, I think, to be a contender in the Big Ten, to cause problems. Like, this still is not a roster that financially is going to match up with the best in the country, but they've taken strides, and like, that matters these days, especially in college basketball, also in college football. So, you know, I think this is a team that needs to be really competitive in the Big Ten. Needs to be around the top 25 throughout the season. Like, I'm not talking about like one weekend in mid-November and then again in like consistently in the top 25. It, you know, drop out maybe sometimes after you lose, but I want to be writing about this team each day about numbered whatever Ohio State. So I think that that's the potential this team has. And then as the season goes on, where do they go? I think is you know, how does Jake Diebler evolve this team? It's a big year for him. I don't think he's on the hot seat or anything like that, but I do think they need to take that next step during the season. And then, you know, obviously the postseason, everyone knows kind of what the expectations are there.
I know Jake had to get out of Dodge and hit the recruiting trail, so it wasn't a very long press conference, but he's very good with the media.
He does a
great job answering questions. Like, Coach can't tell you everything that's on his mind, but I think he does as good of a job as you possibly can. I was a little disappointed that he wasn't asked about the new 5-for-5 rule, because all of a sudden, a guy like Jimmy Williams thought he was entering his final year of college ball, and he's bounced around. He was a JUCO All-American as a freshman, a young man from Solon, Ohio, and he was a solid player as a sophomore at South Florida. Good player last year at Duquesne, 15 points a game. He rebounded well, had some assists, was a third-team All-A-10 performer, and he's thinking he's entering his final year of college ball this year, right? Now he has 2 years left, this one and another one. Everybody on the team except for Hero and Josh O got another year. I mean, the incoming class just gets five to play five. I doubt Anthony Thompson's going to take advantage of that, Pat. That is interesting. Like a guy like Jimmy Williams and all these guys. Like if you're like I like the kid they got, the big guy they got from Kentucky, from Croatia, AJ. Is it Jelovic?
Jelovic, yeah.
It is Jelovic. Because okay, I wasn't sure if it was a silent J or not. Okay, Jelovic. I like him, and I went back and watched his interview from like a week ago. He's got a good attitude. I think people are kind of lumping him in with Christoph Tilly. I think he's got a little more physicality to his game. So
on him. So, you know, obviously he played at Kentucky last year. If you look at the stats, nothing that exciting. He didn't arrive at Kentucky until well into their preseason because he had to wait until the academic school year started. And I know that's something he briefly touched on, but I think, you know, having a full off season with the Buckeyes, because, you know, physically, I think he's interesting and can pop out and shoot threes. Like, this is a different type of athlete than Christoph Tilly. And I don't think we saw the best of Christoph Tilly because of the foot injury last year. But I do think Jelovic has a higher ceiling than what you saw down in Lexington last season. Sorry.
And he can rebound. Like he averaged 5.5 points and 4 rebounds a game at Kentucky last year. He was basically a true freshman. We'll get to it. I want to say one more thing about him, but like he'll rebound. Like the 1 year they counted, the NCAA, it's a moot point now because he now has 3 years left, not just two. He was thinking he'd have 2 years left. Now he has 3 years left if he wants them. But his 1 year, he played a couple years of semi-pro ball over there in Europe. His final year, the one the NCAA counted as a year of eligibility, which is why even though it was his first year at Kentucky last year, first year playing college ball, period, he was listed as a sophomore. He was good. His stats that year, I don't know if Mega Bet Basket is a top league or anything, but he averaged over 11 points and exactly 11 rebounds a game. I mean, playing against probably, you know, some older competition. So it looks like – and if you just look at his stats at Kentucky last year, if you project that out over 40 minutes, which I'm not always a huge fan of that, but he didn't get that many minutes. For him to get 4 rebounds a game at Kentucky as basically a true freshman, not getting many minutes, shows you he's going to hit the glass. All right, I'm excited about that basketball roster. Didn't mean to talk that much basketball, but we hit a lot of football. Hopefully the Buckeyes will get good news tomorrow from – Carlos May, and then 5 days from DGG. We're not really feeling it with sales today, but never know. It's recruiting. All right, my man. Good stuff. I will see you in about a week and a half in Chicago.
Yes, you will. Looking forward to it. Thanks, Dave.
Thanks, Pat. Appreciate it, man. All right, great stuff from Patrick Murphy. Filling in for J-Book. J-Book, if you're wondering, J-Book, I said this at the beginning of the show, is traveling, so he couldn't do the show today. So thanks for Pat for jumping on. Pretty lengthy show here on a Friday. All right, guys, I'm going to close up shop now. Big recruiting day, big recruiting weekend. I think tomorrow's going to be a good day. We'll see. 5 days from now with DGG. I do think he is at least somewhat torn. I think I would have to believe he knows where he's going by now, but perhaps, you know, he's still, you know, at least somewhat torn. I don't know. It makes me feel good that Lachlan – such a good recruiter, and they don't have another running back in this class. That tells me that he must feel pretty good about it, but you never know. Tennessee's going all in on him, you know, like they did with Nico, like they do with Sanders, like they've done with other people. So far, none of those have worked out well for them. So we shall see. But it's the Wild West. I wonder how long it's going to be the Wild West with NIL. We're going to be talking about as the Wild West like 5 years from now. They're going to be guardrails. They're going to be employees by then. Who knows? But it's been wild to cover, no pun intended. All right, great stuff from Patrick Murphy. Thanks to all of you for tuning in to the show. I appreciate it very much. Head over to Bucknuts. You can get your 50% off premium access. Great deal for you guys. Go on over to Bucknuts.com. Get your 50% off. All right, guys. Thanks to all of you. Hope you have a great day and a great weekend. Go Bucks.